young men and women,
you are the future of the world, and the day of tomorrow belongs to you.
As the beatification of Pope John Paul II draws ever closer, people around the world are using this occasion to re-examine the life, achievements, and legacy of this towering figure on the world stage during the final part of the 20th century. Karol Wojtyła was a figure who brought so many new aspects to the papacy. The first pope from Poland, the most travelled pope ever, the first pope to visit a mosque and a synagogue, and the pontiff who created more saints than any other pope, and who now is about to be placed on the penultimate step towards sainthood himself. But what was Pope John Paul like as a person, as a man? One American who became a personal friend of the late pope was George Weigel, Catholic scholar and author of two biographies on John Paul. Weigel met the Polish Pope dozens of times before and during the research for his books and shares with us his insights into the character of Karol Wojtyła, the man. What was the most striking aspects of his personality, something that perhaps was not immediately apparent to the outside world, but that you became aware of as you got to know him during these meetings?
I would say three things that I was unaware of going into the project of writing the Pope's biography. One was the enormous influence of his father in his life. I think his father, who was also named Karol Wojtyła, was the single most important figure in the first 20 years of his life. Secondly, the formative experience that the Second World War was for him. This was a crucible moment in which this personality was formed, the commitment to human dignity and human rights was honed and sharpened, and the commitment to serve those causes through the priesthood of the Catholic Church was made. In terms of qualities or characteristics, I would say he was the most relentlessly curious man I have ever met. He was always wanting to know what was going on. What were the books? What were the movies? What were the arguments? What were the articles? What was going on in the worlds that I touched that he couldn't touch directly? In other words, this was a man who was constantly looking ahead. There was nothing nostalgic about his personality at all. And I came to understand that curiosity not so much as a psychological tick of some sort, but as a reflection of his deep Christian faith. He really believed that Providence was at work in history, and therefore he wanted to know what was going on, because that allowed him insights into how the divine will was working itself out in perhaps surprising ways at this moment in time.
And did he ever laugh or joke with you? And if so, what about?
Oh, yes. He had a very robust sense of humor that tended towards the ironic, but it was not irony in the kind of cynical sense of irony. It was irony in the sense of, oh, wow, look at what the Holy Spirit has done now in a surprising way. He once, as I report in the book, The End and the Beginning, invited a Polish actor who was in Rome to town. And in the course of the conversation, he asked him what role this man was playing in a very famous Polish play called Forefather's Eve. And the actor, a man named Jerzy Stor, said, "Your Holiness, I regret to report that I am Satan," who is a character in the play. And the Pope thought about this a minute and said, "Well, none of us gets to choose our roles, do we?"
Good one. Yes. How Polish was he in his outlook, his friends, his habits?
I think he was a great Polish patriot who understood that much of his personal formation, intellectual formation, came out of the richness of 1,000 years of Polish culture and history. I would say the most strikingly Polish thing about him, though, was not what he ate on holidays, or that Polish sisters cooked for him, or that he loved to sing Polish Christmas carols to the 15th verse with his old friends over the telephone back to Poland. It was his way of looking at history. Poland the state disappeared from the map of Europe for 123 years. Poland, the nation, survived that through its culture. And that taught him that the most dynamic force in human affairs over the long haul is not politics, it's not economics, it's culture. And that gave him the capacity to bend history in a different way by revitalizing cultures, for at the heart of culture is religion, what we cherish, honor, and worship. And that, I think, was his theory of historical change.
Do you think he was, in some ways, quite a solitary man? I mean, we learned how he would spend a long time, you know, in prayer by himself, sometimes prostrate on the floor.
I wouldn't say solitary. I would say that this was a man of genuine mystical gifts who would withdraw into a space where he was not alone, but he was in communication with God in a way that he could not describe. I am often asked, can I describe this mystical experience of his? To which the obvious answer is, I can't describe it because he couldn't describe it. This was a conversation that took place beyond words, before words. It perhaps comes through most clearly in his poetry. I think his poetry was a way he could process, if you will, these experiences in a non-linear, non-discursive way. But ultimately, there is always going to be, at the heart of the person of John Paul II, as in the heart of any great mystical figure, a mystery. And we shouldn't be surprised at that.
Did he ever express disappointment about something or something, some achievement that he wasn't able to accomplish or that he would have done differently if he could have lived his life over again?
The one issue that he pressed me on after Witness to Hope was published was, will it be published in Chinese? I think he very badly wanted to go to China, knew that that was not going to happen, and thought of my book as a way of bringing him to China in a way that he couldn't manage physically. And I'm happy to say that shortly after the beatification, the book will be ready in Chinese, thanks to some great help from Cardinal Joseph Zen. I think that it was a deep disappointment to him that he could not go to Russia. No pope in history had a greater appreciation for the spirituality and theology of Russian Orthodoxy than John Paul II. And yet he was met with everything ranging from discourtesy to hostility on the part of the leaders of Russian Orthodoxy. And I think that was a wound. He was obviously deeply hurt by the revelation that priests had betrayed their vocations around the world, particularly in the United States and Ireland and elsewhere in Europe. And that was a suffering for him. I think he was, frankly, disappointed that Constantinople and Rome were not together again at the end of the second millennium, as he might have imagined they could have been when he came to the papacy in 1978. And, of course, he was a fierce and vigorous defender of the right to life, and I think was saddened by the degree to which a culture of death, as he called it, in 1995, was seeping throughout the Western world.
I was speaking to George Weigel, biographer and friend of Pope John Paul.
Non abbiate paura, aprite, anzi spalancate le porte a Cristo.